Shaloma, you're listening to Watered Womanhood, the podcast for women walking in the truth of who Yahuwah, the Most High, says we are, where we uncover what it means to be His bride. I'm Rava Shah Aloha Lani, founder of the Hebrew Housewife, a set-apart homemaking blog for the daughters of Israel. I've been studying the Word all my life and ministering to Israelite sisters since 2019 by the grace of Abba Nawa, with original homemaking tips, biblical marital advisory, and truth-based devotionals. Join me in building up the kingdom at Hebrew Housewife on Instagram and thehebrewhousewife.com, where you can join both my exclusive email newsletter and the Hebrew Housewives Club, a private Facebook group for us, by us.
Hi, hello, it is me, Sister Asha, on camera, yes. You know I am like camera shy, but I figured I would jump on camera because it's a special month, it's a special season, I'm turning over a new leaf, I want to do something new. And plus, I finally have a webcam. So, yeah, I figured I would, you know, just kind of bring myself to the forefront. You know, I like to hide a little bit. But today, I'm out. I'm about. As you can see, excuse my room. As you know, we are currently living with the in-laws. So, pretty much my entire life is in this room. And if you notice, oh, the mirror effect. I've got some baby stuff laying around. We're preparing for baby. So, yeah, the room is looking a little bit crazy right now. But I just started maternity leave from my part-time job. So, I'm going to be here for the next month getting things ready. Duper excited. It's not going to look chaotic like this. And hopefully, before baby gets here and even after baby's here, I can be on camera more. And if you're listening to this and you can't see me, it's because you're not on the pink side. This podcast episode was recorded via camera, but the visual is only available for my pink side princesses, okay? Sister Kenya, Alexis, Journey, and Valerie on the pink side. Thank you for being active, for talking to me over there, okay? And for going on the journey with me. And if you didn't already know, I have a free tier on Patreon and free content that you can enjoy, okay? So you can go ahead and join us. You don't have to pay anything to enjoy some of the free content I've got, right? Sometimes I like to share things in a more private way, you know, okay? Because I have less subscribers over there, so it's less people reading it. So I feel like maybe I just have a little more incentive to share exactly what I want to share and not feel pressure to be politically correct, if you will. But okay. So today's episode, I really want to talk about being more vulnerable. And it is so befitting for this episode for me to be on camera because I'm not going to lie, it makes me feel vulnerable. It makes me feel extremely vulnerable. So here I am. I feel like we have some misconceptions about what it means to be vulnerable. Sorry, I'm adjusting my screen. And what vulnerability is, how vital vulnerability can be in our walk, right? Especially as biblical women, and exactly what function vulnerability serves for humans in general. And this is something that I'm actually very passionate about. This is something that I have been researching for the past few years because I don't know when it happened to me, but I got to a point where I started to notice the difference between people who had true vulnerability and people who didn't. And this really happened as I began to analyze the different ways that people have impacted my life. And the people who have made the greatest impact on me were the people who were the most vulnerable in my presence. So what I mean by that is that they kind of wore their heart on their sleeves, you know. They were not afraid or ashamed to be naked, to tell the truth, to share their needs, or to talk about deeply disturbing things that they were going through or things that they had done in the past. And then I noticed how I was able to impact others through my own vulnerability, sharing in that same way, being naked, telling the truth, talking about my needs, talking about my past. And I want to preface this episode also by saying that vulnerability is definitely not something that I have perfected. You know, as someone who has spent a good portion of my upbringing, kind of bouncing from house to house, facing different kinds of abuse and negligence and experiencing poverty. It's really hard to be vulnerable. It's not easy at all for me to be vulnerable, especially in marriage and in friendships. And I'm not as close to anyone as I am to my husband. And there are still times where I feel like he could know me better, right? And it can be a little frustrating because I'm like thinking, oh God, I wish he knew me a little bit better. I wish he understood me better. But then it's like when it's time to share my feelings, when it's time to get to the nitty gritty, I'm like backing away. I'm like, you know what? It's fine. It's cool. I'm good. It's all right. But really, I'm like, no, on the inside, I'm not okay. It's not all right. And this is something that I'm working on. You know, like, there are times when I should be vulnerable and my husband is just met with a wall. It's not acceptable to me because I really just want to evolve in my marriage. And I just desire the deep, intimate connection that vulnerability brings to a relationship, you know? So this episode is not just for me to encourage you with three ways to be more vulnerable, but also as a reminder to myself, because as of the time of this recording, next week, I will be 9 months pregnant. And you may well know that pregnancy is the absolute most vulnerable time of a woman's life, okay? Followed by the fourth trimester or her postpartum recovery. And I definitely feel my most vulnerable, yet my first instinct is to run away from this kind of vulnerability. Like, I'm not gonna lie, I have been kind of self-isolating a little bit. I feel, you know, mostly in a space where people don't really understand my desires in this pregnancy, blah, 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 blah. And it has kind of made me recede or retract, if you will. So I don't know what phase you're going through, what challenges you're facing, what issues you're having in marriage or just personally as a woman. But I have a strong feeling this episode is going to be timely for you, just as it is timely for me. And we can all use a reminder from time to time on how to embrace our humanhood instead of trying to be something else. So here are a few scriptures that discuss the theme of vulnerability. 2 Corinthians chapter 12, verse 9 through 10. But he said to me, "My grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, I will boast all the more gladly about my weaknesses, so that Christ's power in me may rest. So that Christ's power may rest on me. That is why, for Christ's sake, I delight in weaknesses, in insults, in hardships, in persecutions, in difficulties. For when I am weak, then I am strong." Psalm chapter 34, verse 18 says, "The Lord is close to the brokenhearted, and save those who are crushed in spirit." And Psalm 62 verse 8 says, "Trust in him at all times, you people. Pour out your heart to him, for God is our refuge." The Most High gives us the invitation for vulnerability first. And before we get into the three tips that I want to share on how to be more vulnerable, I really want to highlight something that is standing out to me even now as I'm saying it, that in the Garden of Eden, Adam and Eve were naked. What does this mean? Why is this important? Well, it means they had shame, but they were unaware of it. So I find it quite interesting that immediately after eating the forbidden fruit of the knowledge of good and evil, Adam and Eve were suddenly aware that they were naked, that they had shame, that they needed to cover. Now here's the question. If the Most High said eating the forbidden fruit will result in death, but the first thing that happened is that they felt shame, then does that mean shame is a bondage that leads to death, or shame is the first step towards that death? Did they begin to see their nakedness as a sort of evil? I don't know about you, but the forbidden fruit of the knowledge of good and evil, you know, is revealing to me that my nakedness is something that I should cover. Certainly seemed like it happened prematurely for Adam and Eve, who had many other tasks and itineraries to fulfill and complete before getting to that point of even understanding what death was, because death was not even something that was ordained for them. And this is kind of where reading the Testament of Reuben comes into play. And if you haven't read the Testament of Reuben, I highly suggest that you do. It is said to be authored by Reuben, who is one of the sons of Jacob, also known as Israel. And Reuben uncovered his father's wife in her drunkenness. So basically, he raped her while she was blackout drunk. And he suffered greatly, right? He talks about his pain. He talks about a lot of things that, you know, it really humbled him. It brought him down and he suffered greatly. And in the Testament of Reuben, not only does he offer the account of the incident of his crime, he also discusses the pathway to sin versus the pathway to eternal life. And he refers to each of them respectively as the fornication of youth versus the order of creation. And I won't get too in depth about exactly what it said because I encourage you to read it for yourself. It's a very short two chapter testament. But basically he says that lust and fornication, or just sex in general, doesn't necessarily even have to be in a negative context. But sexuality is first in the fornication of youth, but sexuality is last in the order of creation. Now you might be thinking how this is relevant to today's topic. I think it's quite simple. The fornication of youth brings about shame, the order of death. It's a fruit of sin, and they are intertwined. So Sirach chapter 4, verse 21 says, "For there is a shame that bringeth sin, and there is a shame which is glory in grace." So not all shame is bad, but there's a certain type of shame that we bring into our relationships with ourselves, each other, and with the Most High, that is a disgrace and that prohibits us from fulfilling divine purposes. And that is truly what I want to emphasize the most, more than the tips to be vulnerable. Because I can sit here and say all day, you need to do this, you need to do that. But if we don't really grasp the why and the gravity of vulnerability and the removal of malignant shame, then whatever efforts we put forth won't be long lasting. They won't become habits or mentalities, but rather things that we practice when we need it, right? It's like a switch. And I just want to let you know, biblical femininity, biblical womanhood, being Christ-like, being holy as a woman, is not a costume that we can put on and put off. The idea is for us to become a vulnerable person and not just a person who can practice vulnerability. And I'd like to quickly share some of Brené Brown's points on vulnerability. Brené Brown is a leading voice on the topic of vulnerability, and she champions this quality as one of the strongest traits that a human being can have. And I totally, absolutely agree with her. I think the thing that sets us apart from all of creation is our fragility, our vulnerability, our sensuality, how we experience life, our ability to perceive pain, and our ability to perceive joy. She says that we should first embrace uncertainty. She is quoted as saying, "Vulnerability is not winning or losing. It's having the courage to show up and be seen when we have no control over the outcome." I couldn't have said it any better myself. Brown also says that gratitude is a key aspect of vulnerability. And her philosophy is that practicing gratitude helps us to acknowledge the goodness in our lives. And when we are continually focused on the goodness of our lives, that malignant shame that you have prevents vulnerability. Well, the malignant shame that you have that prevents vulnerability, it begins to morph because in your mind, the goodness trumps the bad, right? There's more good about me than bad. And so I feel comfortable bringing all of me to the forefront. Or there's more good about the person that I'm talking to than there is bad in them. So I feel comfortable, you know, bringing myself to the forefront, not fearing that they will judge me or that even if they do, you know, I'm grateful for them. I'm grateful for who they are. I'm grateful for what they're contributing. And there are a lot of good resources and articles on the topic of vulnerability, but I find that some of her lectures or presentations are easier to digest and easy to implement. So I suggest if you're interested in learning more about the power of vulnerability, first of all, pray. And second of all, seek your husband because I'm sure he can point out to you the areas in which you're struggling to communicate or to emote or evolve as a woman, because my husband certainly does. when I'm joking around, I'm like, babe, do you think I can, is there anything I can get better at? I'm thinking he's gonna be like, no, you're perfect. But no, girl, he's like, yeah, you could do this, this, this. And it surprises me, and it's very enriching. So just don't underestimate the wisdom and leadership that your husband can provide, even in emotional matters. And then third, check out some of Brené Brown's content on YouTube, okay? Now we are getting into my three tips for being more vulnerable. And I have to go ahead and turn the light on a little bit more because I feel like I'm losing daylight. It's already 3:20, so I hope that's better for those of you who can see me right now. So my first tip for being more vulnerable is accepting help without criticizing. Many of us have the tendency to bear all burdens on our own, interpreting assistance from others as a mark of our own shortcomings. However, welcoming help is indeed a demonstration of vulnerability and potency. It calls upon you to widen your perspective and concede that you can't tackle everything single-handedly. It's crucial to refrain from critiquing or over-evaluating the aid that you're giving. Receive it with humility and gratitude, and recognize that each person has their own distinct style of lending a hand. And it truly reminds me of the verse that I want to say is in Corinthians, 1 Corinthians, but don't quote me. I should have put it in my notes beforehand, but you know how the Holy Spirit is. Sometimes the word just comes upon you, where he says, you know, there are many parts of the body, but, you know, we have to appreciate all the members, you know, and we can't just isolate ourselves, nor can we put more value on one part than the other, right? We can't value other people's gifts more than we value our own, and vice versa. We can't value our gifts more than others, because if the whole body were the eyes, where's the hearing? Or if the whole body is the hands, where's the thought? You know, we are one body, we're one people, we need each other. We need to embrace this interdependency as a people in a community. And now, this is mainly for my sisters, Black women, Israelite women, the women who are always told we're strong, we're independent, the women whose culture forces us to do everything alone or feel like we're doing everything alone, even when we're not. And I would just like to say, you know, this is starting to apply to women globally. I think mainly for women of color, it has been applied, you know, for centuries. And I'm not going to say, you know, that Caucasian or white or whoever women don't experience the same thing, but certainly not to the degree that we have. But I can definitely see the tide turning, especially as relations within the white community evolves, and maybe not for the good. So this is not to, you know, say that you don't experience it either, but specifically with this, I really want to speak to the sisters, you know, because, you know, we have to lean on our own strength, our own intelligence, our own resources and strategies for a lot of things. A lot of the times, you know, it's no secret that single motherhood is rampant in our community. And I think that largely other races of women are starting to come into the bondage of hyper-independence as well. So again, I don't say this to isolate any other group of women, but let's just be honest. Other races of women have much more support in all areas of life than Black women do. In maternity, to present fathers and government welfare benefits. And also there's a stronger sense of community for other groups of women. And it's blatant to us that you just have more support and more space to be vulnerable again, although I can acknowledge that things are changing. So that is why I'm inviting my sisters right now, because this is something we need to work on, especially as our relationship dynamics change within the quote Black community, at least if you're an Israelite. I think that things are getting better. I think that we are having more vulnerable conversations. And I think that the young sisters, especially those who are coming up, are admitting, I need help. I can't do this by myself. I would love a man to lead me and guide me. I would love a man to protect me. And in turn, I will offer the things that he would love for a woman to do as well, because that's what it's about. Again, we are one body and we have to supply each other's needs. There has to be a good exchange. And on that note, you have to accept the help that is there. You know, considering the majority of the diseases that are killing us are lifestyle diseases such as cancer, diabetes, obesity, heart disease, high blood pressure, strokes, etc. That means we just cannot afford to not accept help. And I know that it's hard. I know it's hard to be in an extremely vulnerable place and you need help. And someone is like, okay, I'll help you. And they ask you how you need help. You're like, okay. For me, it was, I wanted to take a bath after I recently had a minor surgery. I needed to take a sitz bath. And my husband ran a bath for me. Okay. I had cleaned the tub maybe like 3 nights before, but of course we had showered since then. But was the tub sparkling clean the way that I like it? No. And did my husband clean the tub before he ran me a bath? No, he did not. But you know what? I got my butt in that tub because I needed to. And did I die? No. Did I get an infection? No. Did anything bad at all result in me getting in a tub that was not up to my standards? Nope. Here I am today, still doing just fine. And I instead, in that moment, was able to appreciate his efforts and appreciate his kindness in helping me in a vulnerable moment for me recovering from surgery, instead of, oh, you didn't even clean the tub, really? When this man has been up with me every night, you know, doing his best. Is it perfect? No. But if I had critiqued him and insulted him or berated him in that moment, instead of just being grateful, not only would he have felt bad or maybe even questioned if he's able to do things right, he probably would have felt less encouraged to do things for me in the future when I'm in a state like this, because I'm just unable to plainly accept help. And getting to that point where you can accept help with gratitude, without critique, it requires true vulnerability. It requires true surrender. And that's really the key that I found to vulnerability, is just saying, you know what? I surrender this. I accept this. This is reality. This is the truth. This is where it is right now. This is where I am. This is what's happening. And I'm still grateful. I'm still here. I still rejoice. I still praise the Lord. I still praise the Most High, you know. And when it comes to accepting help, we have to look towards the future. You know, we have to have some foresight. We have to practice discernment, because again, you don't want to be that person who everybody can see you obviously need help, right? They see a fool trying to push a car up a hill and people pull over to come and help you. And you're like, no, don't push it that way. You guys are listening to me. Help me turn the wheel. And it's just like, all right. People are going to stop helping you. You know what I'm saying? That's really all it is. People are going to not look at you as dependent. They're going to continue to see you as, quote, strong and independent. And you just simply don't want that. I don't want that for me. I don't want that for you. Because when people saw me as strong and independent, babes, there was nothing. Okay? I was receiving nothing. I was doing literally everything on my own, and I will never go back there. So someone's like, do you need help? Actually, yes, I do need help. Thank you for offering. It doesn't matter how small it is. Just last night, okay, again, I'm 9 months pregnant. I'm huge. I'm swollen. I got in the bed. I put my phone on my bedside dresser, like 2 inches away from my pillow. And I forgot to plug up my phone. And I'm like, oh my God, I forgot to plug up my phone. Now, is it the end of the world? No, it's not. But it's hard to bend over. It's hard to lean over the edge of the bed. And so in my mind, I'm like, oh God, here we go. All right, just brace for it. And then my husband was like, do you need help? And I started to say, no, babe, I got it. It's fine. I just got to reach down. But I said, you know what? Yeah, give me some help. Yeah, do that. Come over here, walk around the bed, pick this charger up for me and plug it into my phone. Because you offered. I didn't ask. You offered. Maybe you offered because you thought it was a kind thing to do, but you offered regardless. And I'm going to say Yes. I'm not going to continue to say no if I need help, if it's going to make my life easier, if it's going to keep me comfortable, and if it's going to help someone feel like they're doing a good deed. You know what I'm saying? That's another thing. You don't want to rob people of the opportunity to do a good deed if it's something good for them to do, right? And you know that the Most High will reward them for their kindness, right? Because the Lord loves kindness. Say yes, right? And people may have an ulterior motive. People may have their own selfish reasons, right? It may be about vanity for them or their reputation or their image. And that's where vulnerability comes into play, because the vulnerable person is like, hey, you do it for your vainglory. You do it for whatever ulterior motives that you have. That don't got nothing to do with me. The Lord's going to deal with you and deal with your heart. I'm here for me. I'm loving on me. I'm being vulnerable for me. That's true vulnerability. It's just saying, again, this is the truth. This is where it is. This is what is being offered. This is what's being put on the table. And I accept it for what it is. Now, we're going to keep going forward. And I would like to say, after this point, the episode is not scripted. So bear with me. Again, this is my vulnerability episode, so I'm trying to be more vulnerable. My second tip for being more vulnerable, obviously, is be honest about your feelings, okay? Expressing your feelings honestly and openly can be very intimidating, but it is a significant step towards vulnerability. And this is extremely hard for me. Even with just my husband, who is like pretty much the only person that I talk about my true feelings with. But I can't do it with anybody else. And when I do, I don't use emotional language. I don't say I feel or I think. I have adapted to use very technical language and very, like, I guess you could say, business professional language when I am expressing my feelings, because sometimes I have felt like if I do share my feelings, they're not taken seriously. They're only perceived as just these whimsy woman limbs that I'm just throwing, that, you know, it's just a wild thing. But if I have taken the time to gather my thoughts and formulate a presentation, if you will, I notice that people are more inclined to hear what I'm saying. And I really want to get out of that, because I'm not doing myself any favors. I do that for them. That's not helping me. And to some degree, yes, taking the time to, again, tune into your feminine emotion, channel it, submit it to the Lord, get your thoughts together, and truly pinpoint the core of what you're feeling, so that when you come face to face with it, it looks less jumbled. Like, yeah, that's good. That's what I want to keep. But the whole idea that I have to do that in order for me to be more digestible for someone else, that is not femininity at all. That is quite the opposite, actually. And so my invitation, you know, is to just say it how it is. If you're angry, say, I'm very upset. You know, I'm very angry. You know, being honest about your feelings is about letting your guard down. And there's no way to be honest about your feelings without letting your guard down. And we have to learn how to get comfortable in that space of not having our guard up all the time. Because, again, how can we build those deep, intimate connections with the people that we love, or even with ourselves if we're interacting with people that we don't know or don't love? You know, you have to allow yourself to be seen, warts and all. And it doesn't mean that you share everything with everyone and people know every single detail of your life or the darkest crevices of your mind, but rather just be honest when you choose to share and don't lie. You know, it's about authenticity and being true to your feelings and not hiding behind a facade. And for me, as someone who is an introvert, who is very private, as I'm sure you've deduced by now, I tend to just not share, even when asked, or people are asking about my physical health. Are you okay? Yeah, I'm fine. And really, I got a little backache. Okay, I'm trying not to complain. I don't want to be a complainer. I don't want to be a whiner. Or if somebody makes a decision and they look at me and say, are you okay with that? I'm like, yeah, it's fine. Yeah, I'm cool with that. And really, I'm not okay. I don't want to do that. That's the last thing on the earth that I want to do. You know, part of it is being a people pleaser, and the other part is trying to be noble. But really, again, This is not femininity. Express your needs, express your desires. Will they be met? Not all the time. But that's what vulnerability is. You don't have control over the outcome and you accept that. You lean into that. If someone says, hey, I want to take you here, here, here. You know, your husband's saying, I want to have a nice evening with you. These are the plans that I've made, you know. And he says, are you okay with that? You know, that's the restaurant he wants to go to. That's the movie that he wants to go see. And sure, it's the noble and proper and upright, you know, most etiquette thing that you can do is to say, of course, I would love that. I want to spend time with you. I appreciate that you put this thought into this and I accept your plan the way that it is. Yes. But are you going to wake up tomorrow or next week and think, damn, I really didn't want to do that. Those were his plans. He had more fun than me. You know, it's okay. You don't have to sit here and be like, I don't like that. I don't like that. I like, you know, but say, ooh, maybe instead of this restaurant, what do you think about this one? We haven't been to this one in a long time. Or, you know, it doesn't have to be critique. It doesn't have to be harsh. And you don't have to be honest about your feelings in a way that is grating to the ears or the hearts of others, especially if they're being kind to you. But it's more so just be honest. If he asks, if someone says, are you okay with that? Are you all right? What do you think? How are you feeling? Be honest. Be vulnerable. Show up exactly how you are. And don't let this fear of, oh, they're going to think I'm wanting too much. They're going to think I'm being bitchy. Okay, excuse my French. They're going to think I'm not being grateful or that my anger is irrational. And I know this is especially a huge one for us as Israelite women, that our anger is never justified. People could literally smack us in the face and it's like our anger is never justified. And I'm going to share this. Okay, this is a vulnerability moment for me. You know, I wear niqab, obviously. And there's a lot of politics going around currently in this country regarding this appearance or this presentation and the hijab and Islam. And really, I'll just call it what it is. It's anti-Semitism. It just is flat out anti-Semitism. There's no way around that. We can call it Islamophobia, but really it's anti-Semitism. And since the siege of Israel on Gaza and the people of Palestine, people have become extremely emboldened to be very disgusting towards me in public. And I tend to be a pretty graceful gal. You know, I'm from the South. I like to have my wits about me. I like to keep a, you know, a composition that is calm and level-headed, because at the end of the day, some people carry, some people have firearms. And I just feel like, you know, if you're just talking and you're not really making any direct action, you're not really about that life. You know what I'm saying? And I feel like to some degree, people look at a niqabi and they really don't know what to expect. So even though they feel emboldened, they never really cross that line. You know what I mean? Like they never really go there with me. You don't ever know what's under here, you know, and it's great to have a reputation as a bomber or as a terrorist, because people just don't know what to expect. And it's hard because it means you get profiled, whatever. But then at the same time, it's like people give you 50 feet. You know what I'm saying? They give you 50 feet for the most part. It's like being swole and having tattoos. I know that's a bad analogy, and I hope that the niqabis out there will forgive me. I don't want to perpetuate any stereotypes, but the truth is the truth. You know, there's a certain stereotype or stigma that is attached to the niqab. People are scared. People are afraid. And for some people, that fear translates into giving you 50 feet. And for other people, that fear translates into they want to see how deep the rabbit hole goes. And sometimes these people get in my face in public. And I don't think my husband really believed me, because mostly what happened when I was without him. But recently, again, like I said, they're getting bolder and bolder. And it has started happening when he and I go out now. And it happened not that long ago. Someone was being rude, getting in my space, acting like they were looking at something on the aisle and they really weren't. And I confronted them. I'm like, excuse you. And they, little Karen, Oh, I'm so sorry. I was just trying to look at something, but if I'm in your way, yeah. That's all I said. I was like, yeah. Now walk away. Just go away. Because, you know, you was expecting Shaniqua. Okay, but you about to get Khadijah, right? Because Shaniqua gonna sit here and argue with you. Shaniqua's gonna call you a Karen. Shaniqua's gonna pull out her phone. But when she heard that, yeah. I think she saw, like, oh, okay, let me just walk away. Like, yeah, you might want to just walk away. I'm not that person to argue. You know, I like to keep a composure about myself. But then my husband, you know, we get to the other aisle, probably like 10 minutes later. We can talk about it, because for me, it's like, it's an everyday thing. But I'm like asking him, you see what I mean? You see what I'm talking about? The shit that I go through when you're not around. And it's usually worse. It's usually much more intense than that. And he was like, I don't even know why you be acknowledging these dogs. And I'm like, cuz, like, it's 2024. We not finna keep doing this. Like, this not the world that I'm raising my kids in. And my kids is not gonna see me just letting people walk all over me. You know, it's not like I got out of character. I just say, excuse you, because you're trying to be cute and I'm going to just hold the mirror up to you. Like, we're both going to get cute. And again, this is being honest about your feelings. I don't like the way you're talking to me. I don't like the way you're in my space. I don't appreciate the things that you're doing. And vulnerability is not just, you know, always being soft and, you know, inviting people into your heart of hearts in a way that will make them, you know, more drawn into you. Sometimes vulnerability means you getting the respect that belongs to you. And again, we are the cream of the crop. We are the salt of the earth. We are the city on a hill. And times are changing. We are not living in the same era that we used to. It's 2024. The demographics are changing. The politics are changing. We're going to get what's owed to us. And that starts with respect. And I'm going to continue to demand respect. And that's me being vulnerable and saying, excuse you. You know you're in my way. You know you're playing in my face. I would appreciate it if you didn't. And guess what? She could have said, well, I'm not hurting anybody. She could have started an argument. But a part of being vulnerable for me is, again, I can't control the outcome. She could have went all about it however she wanted to. But again, the Most High has our backs. And that's what we have to realize in being vulnerable, is that the Most High has your back. You know he's in control. So you know that the outcome is for your good. All things work together for those who love Christ and are called according to his purpose. Be honest about your feelings, whatever they are, whether they're good feelings, bad feelings, sad feelings, intense feelings, or surface level feelings. Just be honest. Be real. Show up as yourself. Okay, don't be ashamed of who you are. That's something that I am learning at this stage of my life. Still learning how to do it with family, right? So-called friends. And especially presenting on the internet, whether it's through my private email newsletter or the private Patreon content or the public blog or the public Instagram. It's like, I'm in a Niqabi. Yes, I'm an Israelite. Yes, I read the Quran. Yes, sometimes I speak Arabic, and that does mean I say God in Arabic, which is Allah. And if you don't like it, that's just who I am. And that's okay. People unfollow me all the time whenever I post a selfie, and it's just like, what can I do? You know, that's just me being vulnerable. It is what it is. It's not going to stop me from accomplishing the will that the Lord has ordained for me. And I hope you feel the same way, that if people don't really accept you or appreciate you as you are, especially if you have fully stepped into your biblical womanhood and you have leaned into your dependence on the Lord, at that point, the people who's just not there for you, they're not there with you. They're not on that journey with you. It's cool. Accept it for what it is. Again, this is the truth. This is how it is. I accept it. I lean into it. I'm going with it. But I'm here for me. I'm not here for you. I'm not here to serve man, right? My third tip for being more vulnerable, and this is a final tip: stop avoiding confrontations or problems. Now, the word does encourage us to choose peace. So I'm not saying every single thing needs to be confronted or every single problem needs our direct and immediate action, because we certainly need to always take time to think before we speak and before we act, right? We need to take time. He says, be slow to speak, slow to anger, and quick to listen. And it's human nature to avoid uncomfortable situations, conflicts, or problems. However, it often leads to larger issues down the line when you are ignoring things that clearly need your attention. And being vulnerable means facing these situations head on. It's about having the courage to confront problems even when it's uncomfortable. And this not only helps you grow as a person and a woman, but it also deepens your relationships, you know, because it means you're fostering understanding and you're able to build trust by seeing, how is this person going to respond to me pointing out to them something that makes me uncomfortable? Or even if it doesn't make me uncomfortable, something that I perceive as a problem that, you know, I'm hoping they will take the measure to fix, you know, especially when it comes to marriage, as we are our husband's helpmeets, their advisors and their co-pilots. Girl, I can't even count the number of times where I'm watching my husband, I'm observing him for a few weeks or maybe a month or two, and I see him doing something that I'm thinking, that's not going to be good for us. Like the seeds that he's planting right now, it's not going to blossom into the kind of fruit that we want in this home. And so let me point it out to him. Does it always go right? No, it doesn't. But that's my vulnerability in saying it may not always go right, but I did my part. I showed up in the way that I was supposed to show up. I did the role of a helpmeet. And now beyond the talking, I just got to do my part. I got to speak with my actions, and I got to make sure that, okay, once this fruit does blossom that I don't want to blossom, then I got to know how to handle it. I got to be ready to prune it, or I got to be ready to chop this tree down, you know, or poison the roots or whatever I need to do to get it out of my house and, you know, not be, again, someone who doesn't confront reality. And that's true vulnerability. You know, a lot of people, especially in this generation, including myself, we supplicate these feelings of insecurity or fear missing out by scrolling endlessly, watching TV, listening to music, reading books, doing drugs, gambling, shopping, watching porn, or just trying to acquire, putting on a face, you know, presenting a certain way, getting gratification from the approval of other people. And that comes from just not dealing with reality. And you just can't be vulnerable if you're not someone who can look in the mirror every day and say, this is what it is. And take a survey of life and say, this is what it is. This is where we are. Okay, we are in World War III. You know, this country is certainly heading for a civil war, or maybe my marriage is on the rocks, or my kids don't respect me, or whatever it is that you're going through. Confront it. Look at it. Because that's the first step in coming to resolution. You know what I mean? Coming to a place in where not only do you solve the problem, but you can accept that the problem may not get solved. But when you're constantly distracted and you're scrolling or you're drinking or you're watching porn or reading books, you're not in that place where you can even think about accepting a solution or thinking about a solution, because your mind is so drawn back from reality that a solution doesn't even seem feasible. Because if it seemed feasible to you, you would be in the mind of a solution and not in the mind of distraction. And for the homemaker, let me just tell you, I'm sure you already know, idle hands and idle minds are the devil's playground. And typically, if you find yourself doing nothing or enjoying idle pleasures very often, I'm not going to say that it's bad for you, but, you know, moderation, especially if you have more important things to do. If you find yourself in this idle state for too long, It doesn't mean that you don't have anything to do. It means that you're not doing it. It means that you're not confronting reality. It means that you're avoiding problems. You're avoiding the list. You're avoiding the faucet that needs to be fixed. The toilet that you should probably be plunging. The laundry that should be folded. As you can see, I got a little bit of laundry in the bag. I've got, you know, I've got the bassinet to put together. I've got the bathtub. Got a lot of things that I can be doing too, you know. So you're not alone, but you got to deal with reality. We have to be fully present. We cannot evade, you know what I'm saying? Like, we cannot live in this constant state of fear-driven avoidance. And again, that is why these lifestyle diseases are attacking our immune systems the most, because we are living in perpetual evasion, right? We are constantly trying to evade danger, whether it's emotional, physical, psychological, or spiritual. We as a people are always in this adrenaline cortisol state to where our bodies truly are not relaxing. And I've talked about this before, but if you're truly not relaxing, your body is not doing what it needs to do for you to protect you. And a big part of that is your sleep. Sleep is the most important component, aside from prayer and fasting, obviously, to recuperating and getting what you need from all the things that you bless your body with, such as food and water or even exercise. Those things can't really truly benefit you if you're not getting the kind of sleep that you need so that your body can focus less on hearing and seeing, right? And processing subconscious or subliminal messages or threats that may be abounding that you can't even notice with your human eyes, right? And when you go to sleep, your brain is like, whew, done with that. Now let's do what we really came here to do, which is nurture this body, heal these wounds, solidify these memories, repair the brain, repair the cells. And if you're continuously someone who's running from something, running from problems, afraid of reality, when you go to sleep, you're not really sleeping. Your body is not entering into the state where it needs to be in order to accomplish the will of your brain, the will of the Most High in you, because He dwells in us. Let that stuff go. You can enjoy pleasures. You can enjoy hobbies. You can enjoy life. He says, eat, drink, and be merry, and enjoy the short days of your life that the Lord has given you, because this is a free gift for every man. But moderation, okay? We're supposed to enjoy the fruits of our labor, right? Not just enjoying life willy-nilly. He says, those who love luxury will come to poverty. Those who are gluttonous will come to ruin. You know what I'm saying? So take the time to always evaluate, all right, am I reading this book and watching this video or listening to this music because I'm afraid, because I'm hiding from my feelings, because I'm afraid to confront this problem in my life, or I'm looking at this laundry in the corner of the room like, oh my God. And then instead of doing the laundry, because I'm sitting here thinking, oh my God, now the laundry's not getting done even more. Now it's piling up even more. And I'm seeing this trend of people who are dieting or they're exercising, you know, they're watching their calories, and they talk about how a certain craving will hit them, such as for a cookie. And because they're dieting, they're watching their calories, or they're being so strict on themselves, they go for the apple. And then they eat some cheese crackers. And then they have a steak, a slice of cake, and they end up having the cookie. Because it's like, you really could have just had the cookie. You know what I'm saying? Like, you went through all these steps because of that fear, right? Because of what fear drives you to do. Instead of being vulnerable with yourself and saying, I'm a human being. Sometimes I crave sugar. Sometimes I crave a sweet treat and it's not going to kill me. But then you went and ate the apple and you weren't satisfied. And then the steak and you weren't satisfied. And the cake and you weren't satisfied. And then you get to the cookie and you're like, you know what? I should have just had the cookie first. I should have just folded the clothes first. You know, whatever it is for you. Confront reality. Don't run away from problems. Don't run away from hard conversations. And you know, especially with your kids and again, your husband. But, you know, for me, this applied mostly for me with my daughter, because sometimes kids, as you know, they ask very deep and serious questions And sometimes you have the answer, sometimes you don't have the answer. And sometimes the answer is like, whew, is my 5-year-old, my 7-year-old, my 8-year-old ready to hear these words? Are they ready for the truth? And again, you got to be naked with them. You got to be vulnerable. You just got to show up. Vulnerability is all about showing up. You got to be who you are, where you are, when it's time to be that person, because you're not living in the future. You're not living in the past. You're right here, right now. And as Brené Brown says, it's about showing up how you are in all of your flaws, you know, and realizing, you know what? No, I don't have control over the outcome. It's not about winning or losing. It's just having courage, right? Just be courageous. You know, vulnerability is not some ploy or some strategy to get more of what you want out of other people. It's about leaning into the power of gratitude, no matter how things look, right? Again, embracing that we can still have joy. We can still be grateful. We can still live a very fulfilling life, even with no control over things. And that's just what it is. So my 3 tips for being more vulnerable: accept help without criticizing, be honest about your feelings, and don't avoid your problems. I hope that this episode has been fulfilling to you. And again, listen, my pink tie Patreon princesses are looking at me face to face. Well, technically not face to face. You know what I'm saying, though, because, you know, I'm wearing the veil. But go ahead and join me, because I'm kind of liking this flow. I think I might continue this, and I hope to see you in the next one.
That is all for today's episode of Watered Womanhood. I hope you've been watered. Thank you so much for tuning in today. If you enjoyed today's episode, consider joining us over on the pink side. Yes, I am on Patreon, and I offer exclusive content that just can't be shared on this side, like my personal updates, a monthly magazine-style newsletter, the opportunity to vote on episodes, behind-the-scenes contents, and more. I even offer a special tier for my feminine princesses, starting as low as $5 a month. Be sure to follow, favorite, and leave a review wherever you're listening to make this podcast even more visible. Remember that you can stay up to date and join us for some interesting dialogues at thehebrewhousewife.com and join my newsletter for some members-only perks. And let the peace of Yahuwah rule in your hearts, to the which also ye are called in one body, and be ye thankful. Colossians chapter 3, verse 15. Until next time, my Shebrews, Shabbat Shalomah!